Through at 298-170-200. Matt Bubala here with you on 720 WGN. Joining us on the phone right now is Peter Godfrey Smith. He's a professor in the School of History and Philosophy of Science at the University of Sydney, and he is the author of a book titled Other Minds, The Octopus, the Sea, and the Deep Origins of Consciousness. Peter, thank you so much for joining us on the phone. We appreciate you being with us.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you so much. So I saw the headline a couple of weeks ago that a bunch of scientists are saying that octopi may have come from somewhere other than Earth. And I know that they some of the research was based a little bit or at least inspired by your book. Do you think it's possible that octopus, as we know them, are not of this Earth originally?
I don't think it's a serious possibility. I think octopuses are certainly from Earth. The guys who wrote that paper, they didn't make use of my book. In my book, I say that there's an important analogical sense in which we can think of octopuses as being akin to aliens, because although they are animals who evolved on Earth, they evolved in a way that involves a huge separation from us. The last common ancestor, the ancestor that you most recently shared with an octopus, was an animal that lived about 600 million years ago. And that's a huge evolutionary distance with respect to animal life. And despite that, they're very behaviorally complex and, you know, in some ways quite smart animals. So meeting an octopus is in some ways like meeting an alien. But I don't think that they are literally aliens. And I don't agree with the reasoning in the paper that came out recently. I think it's pretty clearly a mistake.
And their reasoning, and I haven't read the whole thing, of course, but seems to be, from what I have read, that the octopi are so complex that they're not of this Earth, that they're so different than anything else we have here, that it doesn't make sense that they evolved like everybody else did here. Is that kind of their basic gist?
There are two strands to it. One is the fact that they are just very unusual animals compared to other invertebrates. So they have larger nervous systems than other invertebrates. They've got brains and nervous systems that are roughly in the size range of vertebrate animals like ourselves. So that's unusual, and they are very behaviorally complex. The other thing that the authors of the paper drew on was the fact that they do have some quirks from a genetic point of view. So in 2015, the octopus genome was sequenced for the first time. And so there was a paper that wrote about some of the unusual genetic properties that they have. And one thing that this paper does is pick up on some of those peculiarities. But I have a completely different reading of that paper. I think that if you look at that paper, two things are clear. One is that they're very interesting animals genetically. They do have some distinctive features. But those features fit very naturally into place. They're roughly what you'd expect in an animal that's a mollusk, so it's got fairly close relatives who are animals like snails and oysters and clams, more distant relatives that include animals like us. The general profile of the octopus genome is not something, you know, outlandish, something that makes no sense given the general profile that animals have with respect to their genes. It's a sort of moderately unusual set of properties, and a set of properties that you could not have gotten if octopuses had evolved anywhere else. So if you think about, you know, just think about yourself and your siblings, a brother or a sister. You and your brother or you and your sister share a lot of genes. So if we look at samples from you and a brother, we can say, okay, these guys are very closely related. And what that means there is that you and your brother have a very recent common ancestor. Well, that you have two, perhaps, recent common ancestors, your mother and your father. And you and your brother are similar genetically because you inherited genes from that common stock. Now, when you look at animals that are very different from each other, so you and a dog or you and a fish or you and an octopus, the same kind of thing is true. You have a lot of genes in common with those animals. And you have those genes in common because you evolved from a common stock, although we have to go much, much further back in time to get to a common ancestor of you and the octopus. And I think that there's just no evidence that octopuses are outside of that general structure. I think octopuses do have common ancestors with you living here on Earth a long time ago.
All right, so if we go back far enough, just about every living organism, can we track a common ancestor to all the living creatures on Earth?
That's right. It's an amazing fact. I mean, it's something that sort of just bears thinking about and imagining. And that applies to you and a dog, you and a fish, you and an octopus, even you and a blade of grass or a plant. All life on Earth evolved from a common stock. I mean, this was something that was not completely clear until fairly recently. It was a hypothesis that Darwin himself introduced back in the 19th century. It was part of his original formulation of the theory of evolution. And for a long while, it looked like a reasonable view, but perhaps not the only reasonable view. Perhaps life evolved separately a couple of times, and plants and animals perhaps were totally separate. That was, I think, a reasonable thing to wonder for a while. But now that we have a lot of information about the genetic properties of many animals and also many plants, it's clear that life on Earth does have a kind of unity, a kind of deep historical unity, such that you and the tree outside have a common ancestor if we go far back enough in time.
That is amazing to think about. And on some level, it does make sense that the Earth would have been created out of whatever, and so everything stems from that in some way, shape, or form. But then the question becomes, and in the review of your book that I was able to read from, reading about the idea of consciousness and how consciousness formed, and I guess then the big question becomes, if we all evolved from the same thing, if we go back billions and billions of years, why is it that humans have evolved to a level of consciousness and conversation and everything that we have, that we so dominate this planet out of all the different species that have evolved?
It is a remarkable set of facts, the set of facts about what humans have done and that no other species has done. Part of the point of my book is to think about the question, how many different kinds of animals are such that they do have experience of some kind. It feels like something to be those animals. They experience their lives rather than just sort of, plodding through them robotically. And octopuses are my main example of an animal that's very different from us and very historically removed from us, where we have, I think, good evidence to think it feels like something to be an octopus. I think they're sentient animals. I think, incidentally, the same is true of crabs, another interesting invertebrate case. And then you get to more difficult, more controversial cases among other invertebrates, even before you get to vertebrates. So I think the presence of a kind of sentience or a basic ability to experience things is widespread in animal life. And the next question, well, one of the next questions one might ask is, why did it turn out that one particular primate species came to do such unusual things? Why did Homo sapiens come to, as you say, acquire such extraordinary power over what happens on the planet and power over the future of many other kinds of life on Earth? I have a little bit in my book about that. I think that one of the old answers that's given, which is the peculiar power of language as both a medium for communication and also as a medium for thinking, I think that's likely to be part of the answer about how humans got to be so distinctive. But I wouldn't want to suggest that those are questions that I have a lot of definite answers to. I think those are good questions.
Well, let me ask you a little deeper. So when you say feels like something to be an octopus or another animal, what does that mean? Do they have memory? Do they, understand things? Do they think about why they do certain things? All these things that we do that it seems that no other animal does. What level of sentience are we talking about?
Well, I think they certainly have memory. And memory is pretty widespread among animals. There are different kinds of memory. One of the interesting questions that's been asked in some recent papers about these and other animals is which animals have what's called episodic memory, which is memory of events, like when you remember your last birthday or something like that, or remember what happened yesterday, the kind of, internal movie-type memory. Lots of animals have memory, but probably don't have that sort of memory, which is the most vivid form of human memory. There's not been work on octopuses specifically that bears on that kind of memory, but there has been work on cuttlefish, which are fairly closely related to octopuses. And that work suggested that cuttlefish do have episodic memory or something like it. I mean, the paper said that they have episodic-like memory. The idea was that if you're a cuttlefish, which is looks a bit more like a squid than an octopus, you can remember particular things that have happened to you, such as whether you found food in this location on this particular occasion. And you can use that information to work out how to find food in the future. So memory is something which probably exists in very rich form in a surprisingly wide range of animals. One of the other things you mentioned is the kind of thought or cognition that's involved in a sort of reflection on events, where a human can sort of sit back and reflect on things that have happened and, you know, try to puzzle things out or try to understand them. That sort of reflective intellect is something which is probably a lot rarer. There's some work on birds that suggests that birds, some crows in particular, can sort of look at a problem and then do quite well at solving the problem without experimenting physically first. They can just sort of see a solution to a problem rather quickly. I don't think octopuses are likely to be able to do anything like that. Their way of dealing with things is through physical exploration, basically. They're very physically exploratory animals. So whereas certain kinds of birds, when presented with a novel situation, might sort of sit back and try to work out a solution to a problem, an octopus will sort of more likely just jump in there and start manipulating the thing, trying to sort of puzzle it out physically.
All right. So, but when we talk about them figuring things out, are we talking about a bird figuring out how to get through a hole because food is on the other side? To me, that wouldn't, I guess any animal, I would think, of course, there's a survival instinct that we wouldn't necessarily relate to consciousness. Do any animals sit back and reflect on, I don't like that other bird, I'm not going to hang around with that bird anymore? Think, you know what I mean? Like things that are a little more upper level, where it's not just this is survival based, this is more thinking about why and how we do things. Or am I looking at it completely wrong, and maybe everything we do still can be distilled down to survival instinct in some way, and maybe we're not as complex as I'm giving us credit for?
I think we're very complex. I wouldn't be trying to sort of deflate or downgrade the apparent complexities of humans. In the bird case, I mean, the work I'm thinking of is work that involves the use of tools by birds. So the birds in question, probably the most impressive birds in this area, are a certain kind of crow from New Caledonia in the Pacific. And there's now a lot of experiments in which these birds are able to look at a situation and work out that a particular kind of piece of bent wire will enable them to, you know, get through an obstacle or solve a problem or get to food that they couldn't otherwise get to. And they will pretty spontaneously bend pieces of wire to make a tool of the right kind. So we're not talking just about a bird, you know, looking at a maze or a physical problem that requires the bird to mess around with it. The bird is doing something pretty impressive, making a tool and putting that tool to use. You mentioned social intelligence, the sort of thing where an animal might think, you know, I don't like this guy, I do like that guy. Mm-hmm. This is certainly an area where primates and also some birds and dolphins do seem quite sophisticated. There's a very good book about social intelligence by Cheney and Safar called Baboon Metaphysics, which I write a bit about in my own book. And the impression one gets from the more we learn about the social life of primates like baboons is that it's a soap opera. There's this incredibly complicated, often rather vexed and difficult set of social interactions that the animals are dealing with. And it involves a lot of tracking of individuals, working out, you know, this guy is being good to me, this guy is not. This guy I don't like, but he's an ally of this other one. So I've got to deal with two rather than one individuals if I choose to make trouble. That sort of social intellect is widespread in animals like primates, and it's fairly likely that some of the unique evolutionary processes that gave rise to human intelligence involve the complexities and pressures of that kind of social living.
Okay, so then is it reasonable to think that, since I would assume evolution is a continuous thing and will still evolve and all the creatures on Earth will still evolve, is it reasonable to think that maybe a billion years from now we won't be the only creatures on this planet, assuming we can survive that much longer, that have the level of consciousness that we have?
I think anyone who tries to say anything about that question with a lot of confidence is doesn't have much justification. It's so hard to work out what's likely to happen, I think, even in the near future. I mean, one of the provisos you mentioned is whether we survive and whether we succeed in not messing up the planet so much that nothing complex can survive. I think those are quite big provisos. I think there's a fair chance that we will mess things up very badly for complex forms of life like ourselves. If we don't, then, you know, I have no idea. People often wonder whether octopuses and other cephalopods might, in principle, evolve more complexity and a more conspicuous role in shaping the future of the Earth. I don't think, you know, I think if they were to do that, they would have to change themselves in quite substantial ways. One of the surprising things about octopuses and other cephalopods is they're very short-lived animals. Octopuses generally live just for 1 to 2 years. And 2 years is quite a long lifetime for many octopus species. So despite being very behaviorally complex, they rush through their lives. They're also a lot less social than we are. So the particular advantages that humans get from their complex forms of social living are some way away from cephalopods and many other animals. But we can imagine pathways, I think, by which, given enough time, some of these things would change.
Are there any species that seem to have the physical attributes that would allow a higher form of consciousness, or is that going to require much more evolution for other species to have the brain power or the ability to vocalize that maybe would be required to catch up to us?
I don't know a great deal about dolphins, but the more I learn, the more impressed I am by them and amazed, really, at the kind of complexity they have. Dolphins would be, and it's a fairly standard candidate, but I think a good candidate for an animal that might have a huge amount going on inside that we really barely have an inkling of. So that would be one candidate. There's a book by Carl Safina. He's written a number of books in this area where he explores a range of interesting candidates for animals that might have a great deal going on inside them. Wolves, he talks about, orcas or killer whales are another example, and elephants, another animal that I've only just begun to learn a bit about. They also may have a great deal going on inside them, stuff that we have barely an inkling of.
The book is called The Octopus, the Sea, and the Deep Origins of Consciousness. Peter Godfrey Smith, a professor in the School of History and Philosophy of Science at the University of Sydney, has struck down the idea of octopi coming from another planet, but has given us a lot to think about. I really appreciate you jumping on the phone tonight, Peter.
It's been a pleasure.
I hope we talk again soon. Thank you so much. Have a great weekend. That's fascinating. All right, we got to take a quick break. Then we got the news next, 720 WGN.